First pitch to Witt, and he smacks it deep left field. A no-doubt blast for Bobby Baseball. Way out of here. Two-run shot to tie the game at two in the top of the third. The coronation continues. Bobby Witt Jr. puts the baseball world on notice. His 20th home run of the season.
And with that home run, Bobby Witt Jr. into the history books as he became the first player in Major League Baseball history, not Royal history, Major League Baseball history, with at least 20 home runs and 30 stolen bases in each of his first two big league seasons. That was his 20th home run on Friday night in a 7-5 win over the Phillies, which was the Royals' seventh straight win. Bobby Witt Jr. already at 20 home runs and 32 stolen bases in just 109 games a season. Even without limiting it to a player's first two seasons, he's in extremely rare territory. Witt Jr. is one of just four active players with multiple 20-30 seasons at any point in their careers, joining Mike Trout, Ronald Acuna, and Jose Altuve. That's a pretty good list of company. And Witt Jr. still has 51 games to add to his totals. He's on pace for 30 homers, 46 steals. No player in Royals history has even had a 30-30 season, let alone a 30-40 season. Only five players in Major League Baseball history have had a 30 home run, 45 stolen base campaign like Witt Jr. is trending towards. That would be Mike Trout, Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds, Eric Davis, and Bobby Bonds. That is elite company. And Ronald Acuna Jr. is on pace to do that as well, to join that list. So pretty good stuff. Bobby Witt Jr. doing some really good things for, of course, a team that isn't very good in the Kansas City Royals. Welcome to Sports Ticket. Wade with you. Dusty out again here today on vacation, and well-deserved vacation at that. The Royals did win their seventh in a row on Friday night. However, they lost on Saturday 9-6, and they lost 8-4 yesterday. Royals lose 2 out of 3 in Philadelphia, so now they're on a two-game slide. They're 36-77 on the season. Royals jumped out to a 3-0 lead, top of the first. Zach Greinke finally getting some run support, but couldn't hold things down. Phillies tied the game with 3 of their own in the bottom of the second. Royals retook the lead on an MJ Melendez homer in the second, went up 4-3. Phillies came right back with 2 more against Greinke to lead 5-4 at the end of 2. Royals would not score the rest of the game. Zach Greinke went 4 innings. He allowed 5 runs on just 59 pitches. But the bigger conversation after the game was about his chance at hitting. In the fourth inning of the Royals' loss yesterday, Greinke entered the on-deck circle with a chance to do something he hadn't done in 2 years, have an at-bat. A left hand injury to Salvador Perez after his hit by a pitch forced designated hitter Freddie Fermin to go behind the plate, requiring the Royals to place the pitcher in the third spot of the lineup. The Royals trailed 5-4 with 2 outs in the fourth inning. MJ Melendez was at the plate, and to his left was Zach Greinke in the on-deck circle, wagging a bat over his head. Took some swings with the donut, but it wasn't meant to be. Melendez ground out the first, ending the inning. When the inning ended, Greinke took off his helmet and gloves and then briefly talked with the manager, walked back to the mound, and he got a fly out on the first pitch. 3 pitches to get a ground out, and then a single up the middle on a first pitch, and then immediate pickoff by Greinke. It's only a 5-pitch inning, but that was enough. That was it for Greinke. And Matt Cotrero, the manager of the Royals, said the only way he was going to hit was if MJ Melendez had hit a homer to give us the lead the inning before. It was a 1-run game. We're definitely going to use a position player to hit there. We have to take a chance to score. It would have been great. I would have loved to have seen Zach hit. I wish we were up 7-2 and we could have let him hit 3 times. That would have been great. But we have to take a chance to win the game. And then Edward Olivares lined out as the pinch hitter in place of Greinke. Greinke ranks 3rd among active full-time pitchers with 9 career home runs. His 9 career stolen bases are 2nd only to Greg Maddux. He has not taken a regular season at-bat since 2021 when he was a member of the Astros. And he has not had a hit since 2019. But Royals fans didn't get to see Zach hit yesterday, but close. Royals 36-77 after a 7-game winning streak. They've lost 2 in a row. They face the Red Sox tonight in the first of 4 games at Fenway Park. The Red Sox in wildcard contention at 57-54. First pitch at 6-10, lefty Cole Reagans, who was very good his last time out for the Royals. His best career start, where he went 6 innings and struck out a career high 8 in a scoreless performance, will be on the mound for the Royals. So I found this very interesting. The trade deadline. Contenders trade to add pieces to try to make the playoffs and win a World Series championship. And teams that aren't very good are sellers, and they try to trade good players they have for future prospects usually. How about this? The Mets were in selling mode. They traded 5 players and 0-6 since the trade deadline. The Reds acquired a reliever. They're 0-6 since the trade deadline. They're trying to contend. The D-backs acquired a closer and an outfielder. They're 0-6 since the trade deadline. And the Angels acquired five players, and they are 0-6 since the trade deadline, as they were swept in a four-game series by the Mariners yesterday. So the trade deadline not good to the Mets, the Reds, the D-backs, or the Angels in regards to the results after making all of those trades. KU men's basketball is in Puerto Rico. Saturday, they won over the National Bahamian team featuring NBA player and former OU star Buddy Hield, 92-87. KU overcame some bad foul shooting, 14-27 from the line, got the win. Michigan transfer Hunter Dickinson led the way, 28 points on 11-13 from the floor. Buddy Hield scored 18 points to lead the Bahamians despite only playing the first half. KU will play their third and final exhibition game in Puerto Rico today against the National Bahamian team. That'll be 11 a.m. this morning, pregame at 10:30. On your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas, C 96.3 The Lake. NBA stars DeAndre Ayton and Klay Thompson could play today against KU for the Bahamian team. Chiefs training camp, their 13th practice will be today as they get ready for their preseason opener Sunday at noon at New Orleans against the Saints. Pregame 11 o'clock for the home of the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, Z96.3 The Lake. Chiefs had yesterday off. U.S. women's national team's quest for an unprecedented three-peat ended yesterday in Melbourne when the team lost 5-4 on penalty kicks to Sweden in the Women's World Cup round of 16. This marks the earliest ever exit for the U.S. women's national team at the World Cup. They are done. You know, there were people that are watching USA. Dustin, I talked about it last week. We didn't think the USA was going to win the cup. Some younger pieces, some older pieces are about ready to retire or at least be done with the national World Cup play, like Julie Ertz and Megan Rapone, who missed the penalty kick yesterday pretty badly, and it was the first miss on a penalty kick for her in like 5 years. Came at a bad time, as she said afterwards. She was just had to laugh. It was so sick, as she called it, by she missed it by that much. But USA was really, they underperformed the whole tournament. And Carly Lloyd, who used to play for the American team and won World Cups, she had said that she thought there was a bit of a distraction with the team in regards to focusing on winning wasn't maybe the top priority. It was more about sometimes worrying about their branding and their individuality. And a lot of people didn't take that very well or didn't like it. Of course, why would you if you're playing on the national team or a coaching member of the staff? But at the end of the day, you have to wonder what happened. And I think it's a combination. One, other countries have gotten better at women's soccer. Okay, that's one. And two, I think that the U.S. women's national team is in a state of transition, with a few of the older players now fading out. Some of the newer players are going to have to take over. Whether Alex Morgan is going to be, you know, the leader of this team the next time for the World Cup, or whether she'll step away, don't know. She's young enough, she could play again. Sounds like she probably will. But she's probably got to be the leader and go for that. It might be the elder statesman the next time the USA participates in the World Cup. So disappointing, but I think a lot of people saw this coming. And USA women didn't score a goal in their last two matches. I mean, you don't deserve to move on if you can't score a goal. They moved on without scoring a goal in pool play because they moved on with a draw against Portugal. And they're lucky that a shot in the 90th minute didn't hit the post. If that goes in, USA doesn't even make it out of pool play. And then you can sit here, and I see people going, well, USA's so unlucky, but they lost by a millimeter. That one ball and penalty kick, it just got across the line, barely did, or whatever it was, or whatever. Yeah, it's like, listen, games, matches, sporting events are determined by millimeters, centimeters, inches, whatever it might be. Listen, the USA wasn't complaining too much about how, oh, you know, if this would have been just a few millimeters over to the left, we would have lost to Portugal. So sometimes people believe it's karma. What goes around comes around. You barely survive Portugal, maybe a little bit lucky by the bounce of the ball off the post, and then you lost because a few millimeters with the ball and the in the goalie box and the goal. So I guess you can look at it any way. The bottom line is the USA couldn't score. And then some of their, you know, Megan Rapone missing the penalty kick. You know, you don't figure that's going to happen. But that's why we play sports. We don't know what's going to happen. So sometimes it doesn't go like you think. And the USA is done. Knocked out, earliest exit ever in the round of 16. All right, conference realignment. Yeah, we spent a lot of time on this last week or two on the show, and it's got to be one of the top stories in sports, and it has been. And we were talking about last week on the show, and I mentioned that the earthquake is probably coming, whether it's going to be in the next few days, the next week or two, or over the course of the next 12 months. There was no doubt something was going to happen, and the Pac-12 was going to lose some members. They had already lost Colorado. That didn't cause an earthquake. But the earthquake was what's going to happen to the rest of the Pac-12, because they finally came up with whatever this media deal they want to throw out at their members, which maybe was going to get up to $19 to $23 million a year. A lot of it was dependent on subscribership to Apple TV, Apple subscriptions. They had to working with Apple, so forth and so on, streaming. And I never thought for a moment Oregon would really be that serious about doing that. So I always thought Oregon was definitely going to go somewhere, and that's the best brand remaining in the Pac-12, because USC and UCLA were poached by the Big Ten. And so Friday, it was a crazy day Friday, because Thursday night the reports were that Arizona was all but a done deal going to the Big 12. Arizona State and Utah were probably going to be behind them, although Arizona State was begrudgingly going to the Big 12, possibly because their president was wanting to stay in the Pac-12. He wanted to somehow keep it together. So it looked like Arizona was going to go. Don't know about the others. Big 12 would be to 14. Maybe Arizona State and Utah would come. Friday morning, there were people reporting stuff that ended up being somewhat inaccurate. There's a certain person out on the West Coast that has lost to all credibility and doesn't seem to have a good reputation at all for reporting on sports, because all his information was wrong every single turn. But yet he won't, you know, fess up to it or admit that he was in the back pocket of Pac-12 officials. But the bottom line is this, that the Pac-12 was trying to round up people, do a grant of rights deal. And it's like, why would these schools that are very close to leaving, why would they suddenly have an about face and sign a grant of rights deal? It didn't make sense to me at all. And that was the report. They're having this meeting, so forth and so on, blah, blah, blah. And it sounded like Arizona wanted to go for sure, but Arizona State was going to have to be a package deal. That it was the Arizona Board of Regents wanted both schools to go. So Arizona was almost being held hostage a little bit. Like, if they're going to go to the Big 12, Arizona State's got to agree to go with them. And Arizona State was being reluctant about doing that. So then the reports came out Friday morning, right during the show, towards the end of our Sports Ticket show. I was telling you about the different information out there. There were some saying Arizona is still going to the Big 12. There are reports that Oregon and Washington, maybe they're not going to go to the Big 10, that had soured a little bit. There were talks about how the Pac-12 might be able to somehow salvage this thing, which I never truly believed. And then, supposedly, the Big Ten, after a meeting the Pac-12 had, the Big Ten reached out again to talk with Oregon and Washington. Oregon leaking it out there that they're interested in maybe staying in the Pac-12. And I think that was all a smokescreen to get the Big Ten a little bit worried about, oh, we want Oregon, we better move quickly. So they sweetened the deal a little bit financially for Oregon and Washington. And so Oregon and Washington said later in the day, we're gone. We're going. Big Ten have a conference call. They were approved it. And boom, Oregon and Washington gone. Well, as soon as they were gone, then it was kind of like the writing's on the wall. Next thing you know, Arizona basically, for all intents and purposes, were already going to the Big 12. Then Arizona State reluctantly jumped on the wagon and said, okay, we're going to apply for membership for the Big 12. And then Utah was like, well, listen, if Arizona State are, we've got to too. Kind of a package deal. And the Big 12 quickly approved those schools' applications, and they're now going to be members of the Big 12 going into next season. So you've got Utah. And then Colorado was joined a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. By the way, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, that's right, Mark Johnson will be with us on Thursday to talk about conference realignment, talk about Colorado's decision to rejoin the Big 12, talk about the Pac-12 mess and leadership that they have. The Pac-12 is now down to four schools: Oregon State, Washington State, California, and Stanford. Now, Stanford and Cal are well-established academic universities, and Stanford's won more national championships over the years in all the sports combined than anybody else, I think, in America, I read. So it is interesting. Why are they left out? Washington State's had a pretty solid football program over the years. Not unbelievable, but solid. Oregon State's not been so great. So that one might be. And then Cal hasn't been great in football. And then the next thing you know, it's like, are we talking about football? We're talking about the academic institution of the school. Are we talking about collectively all the sports? And we know that it's all driven by football. And if it's driven by football, Stanford's been pretty decent in football. Washington State's been decent in football. Oregon State, Cal, not so much, probably. Although Cal did produce Aaron Rodgers, remember him? Quarterback of the Jets, used to be quarterback of the Packers. But those are the four that are remaining because of these defections. And there's all kinds of ways to look at this. And if you're a Big 12 member, you've got to be like, you know, Brett Yormark saved this conference. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And instead of being poached, we are the ones that are adding schools. And Jerome Tang, K-State men's head basketball coach, heading into his second season, is excited about the Big 12 adding and expanding.
It's a whole lot better thinking about the conference growing than wondering whether you're going to be in a conference. And I was at Baylor when the last time it happened, and we were wondering, you know, I mean, obviously there was going to be a place for certain schools, but we weren't sure where we would be at. And I'm sure our fan base, we've experienced that during that same time too. So right now, being a part of an expanding conference, a growing conference, one of the top three conferences in the country, and man, I'm like, let's go get them all, you know, like really. And let's I can't really say what I want to say because I might mess up some stuff, but I'm excited about some of the schools that are coming in and the potential of other schools to come too.
All right, so Jerome Tang is excited, and there is a chance the Big 12 is not done adding schools. There have been a few reports that Brett Yormark and the Big 12 has had a preliminary discussion with Oregon State and Washington State. And now there's a report coming from Max Olson on the West Coast. The Big 12 is not discussing adding Oregon State or San Diego State at this time, two conference sources tell The Athletic. So what does Oregon State and Washington State do? What does Cal and Stanford do? Does the Pac-4 that's remaining, do they merge with the Mountain West? I don't know. I don't think any of those probably can go independent. Oregon maybe had the chance. Maybe Stanford could. I don't know. So what do you do? What do you do when you're the remaining four schools? The remaining four schools in the Pac-12 are in the boat that some people predicted. K-State, Iowa State would be two that would be left out of the arms race when the Big 12 was maybe going to fail. Remember that? Like, well, KU will probably have a home because of basketball and this and that. It's what some people thought. Maybe they wouldn't have. K-State, where do they go? Iowa State, where do you go? Well, you know, Iowa State should go to the Big 10, but the Big 10 isn't interested in Iowa State. K-State, you know, where would they go? Mountain West? Well, guess what? Year and a half, 2 years later, after all this mess with Oregon, or with Oklahoma and Texas, you know, secretly talking to SEC and then sneaking out the back door, and somehow the leadership and Bob Bowlesby didn't have any idea what was going on, which tells you how bad the leadership was then. And before that with Dan Beebe. Then they hired Brett Yormark. The Big 12 is now on the other side of the coin here. And listen, if Brett Yormark is not hired, if Bob Bowlesby continues to be the commissioner of the Big 12, or the Big 12 hires another guy that's just like Beebe or Bowlesby, I would be willing to bet you that we would be talking today about how the Big 12 is basically done and dead. K-State and Iowa State are scrambling to find homes like Oregon State and Washington State are, and the Pac-12 would be the one sitting here in a much better position. You can go ahead and slice this any way you want. The bottom line is leadership won out. The better leadership of the two conferences, the Big 12 and the Pac-12, the better leadership won out. The guy that was proactive and aggressive, the guy that was thinking outside the box, the conference that was willing to be proactive is the one that won this battle. And now the Pac-12 is left to pick up the pieces. So what about the Big 12? The Big 12 going to add more? ACC, Florida State's trying to get out of the ACC apparently. It's going to cost them $120 million exit fee. They're trying to get out of the grant of rights situation. They've got lawyers they're spending a lot of money with trying to find loopholes. If they do leave, I'm sitting here going, where's Florida State think they're going? I would assume they think they're going to the SEC. Then the SEC goes to 17. They're going to have to add another one. So then the SEC suddenly go, well, we're taking Florida State. Now let's go ahead and go after Clemson. Get Florida State and Clemson, and now the SEC has 18. The Big Ten now has 18 because they added Oregon and Washington, and it sounds like they're going to go to 10 conference games in football, which would make sense, which means you're only going to have a couple non-conference games, which a lot of people would say, well, good, that's fine. So, you know, is this good for the fans? The Big Ten, no. Now, the Big 12, it might not be so bad, and I'll explain that here in a moment. The Big Ten has this wild footprint, and I know the Big 12 does too. I know the Big 12 now has Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, BYU over that way, and they've got West Virginia, and they got Central Florida, kind of the outlier. You know, you got Cincinnati, you got Iowa State, you know, schools in Texas, and we know KU and K-State, so forth and so on. But the Big Ten has the extreme far left and far right. You've got Oregon and Washington in the Northwest, and you got Rutgers in New Jersey. USC, UCLA, West Coast, you got Northwestern, Penn State in Pennsylvania. Traveling's going to be a you-know-what, especially in the Big Ten, I think more so than the Big 12 as of now. Now, if the Big 12, you know, adds Oregon State or Washington State, or if they add more on the West Coast, then, yeah, it's a little bit different. There's also rumors out there that the Big 12 maybe is not looking to add any more schools for football, but to add two basketball powers, UConn and Gonzaga, basketball only, have an 18-team basketball conference and a 16-team football conference, which I wouldn't put it past Brett Yarmark to do something creative like that. I have no problem with that myself. I don't know what UConn football does. Gonzaga doesn't have a football program, but that's a topic for another day, perhaps. And then is this a race to 20? Is every conference going to get to 20? And do you just add schools to add schools? Like, Arizona State's already said some really, I almost think Arizona State's a mistake, to be honest with you. Because Arizona wants to be in the conference. Arizona State doesn't seem to really want to be, but that's like the life raft that was allowed for them. And their president said some very questionable things. And their AD says that he's not going to Morgantown. I mean, he's already taking shots at a place he's never been to. Arizona State seems to think they're, I don't know, a little elite, a little entitled, but yet they have no room to say they're elite, and they have no room to be entitled. If they're so damn entitled, why aren't they independent like Notre Dame? There's somebody that's probably more entitled than anybody is Notre Dame. They have their own network. They have their own money. They don't need to be part of this whole conference realignment puzzle. Arizona State's already rubbing people the wrong way. So I don't know if they're going to be a malcontent in this conference, and if so, that's a problem. But at the same time, if you really want Arizona, it sounds like it was pretty much a package deal with Arizona Board of Regents, which is unfortunate for the Big 12 if they really didn't want Arizona State. It is very fortunate for Arizona State to have a landing spot. And then Utah, I think Utah fit in all right. No big deal. Utah and BYU are hated rivals, so BYU's like, oh, great, now they joined us. Well, we just joined, and now they're going to join us a year after that. But that's a rivalry. That's within the Big 12. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out, if the Big 12 will add more or not. Before I get to the travel distances, there's a study that was done in regards to the new Pac-12 teams. How much more will they have to travel? It may surprise you. It's not as bad as you may think. But Eli Drinkwitz, he's the head coach of the Missouri football team. Now, listen, he said some things that, you know, people don't necessarily agree with. He's a little bit outspoken, which I like. People are outspoken. Doesn't mean you have to agree with everything they say. And he made some very interesting points. He was asked about everything that's going on. You know, the conference looks like basically dying in the Pac-12, a whole bunch of conference realignment. You've got the weird situations, especially in the Big Ten, where you got teams as far west as Oregon and Washington, all the way as far east as Rutgers in New Jersey, so forth and so on. And here was Eli Drinkwitz, who is a member of the SEC. Granted, Missouri bolted the Big 12 to go to the SEC for more money, and they gave up. They end up traveling a little bit more than they used to had they been in the Big 12. They also basically gave up on their rivalry with Kansas, although that's starting to be resurrected a little bit. If you're a KU fan, you might immediately write off what he says and like, I don't want to hear anything that a Missouri guy says. But I think if you can be objective enough and listen to what he has to say, I think he makes some really good points. So here we go. Eli Drinkwitz, head coach of the Missouri football team, about the cost of conference realignment.
All right, I'm going to say it. I thought the transfer window, I thought the portal was closed. Oh, that's just for the student athletes. The adults in the room get to do whatever they want, apparently. And it's, you know, it's just sad that there's, my question is, did we count the cost? I'm not talking about a financial cost. I'm talking about, did we count the cost for the student athletes involved in this decision? What cost is it to those student athletes? We're talking about a football decision. They based off football, but what about softball and baseball, who have to travel cross country? Do we ask about the cost to them? Do we know what the number one indicator of symptom of or cause of mental health is? It's lack of rest and sleep. Traveling in those baseball, softball games, you know, those people, they travel commercial. They get done playing at 4. They got to go to the airport. They come back. It's 3 or 4 in the morning. They got to go to class. I mean, did we ask any of them? Are we going to look back? I don't worry at all about the game. The game is going to be strong. Football is going to be fine. We'll all figure it out. But did we consider the people that we are entrusted to? Did we consider the student athlete? Because then we're asking them to go out on their own to get NIL. We didn't say we're going to revenue share. We're not saying they're getting a piece of it. So that's the thing that's bothering me right now in this whole situation is we keep trying to limit what the student athlete can do, but then we act on our own. And everybody's got their own reasons, and I'm not questioning any of those. I'm saying as a collective group, have we asked ourselves, what's it going to cost the student athletes? I saw on Twitter several student athletes talking about one of the reasons they chose their school was so that their parents didn't have to travel. They chose a local school so that they could be regionally associated so their parents could watch them play and not have to travel. Did we ask them if they wanted to travel from the East Coast to the West Coast? Man, you know, I love the game, but every game that I coach, I look up in the stands and find my family. I make sure they can play. I make sure they can be there because that's what I'm doing this for. And you're talking about volleyball, baseball, softball, track. I mean, all those other sports, man, they're not fortunate in to travel like the way we do. Football will be fine. Still, we count the cost of the collateral damage of everybody else. I don't know. Only time will tell, but that is my biggest, like, looking at it going 24 hours after, say, did we really think about that? I don't think we did.
Listen, I think he makes some outstanding points. Outstanding points. And the answer to his question is no, they didn't. Listen, this is all about TV. This is all about money. The people that are pulling the strings, okay, ultimately the people pulling the strings are executives at Fox and ESPN. That's what this is. Fox was pushing the Big Ten to add USC and UCLA. They wanted to dominate the West Coast window, and they got it to happen. And ESPN right now doesn't have a West Coast time window now because of all the shuffling. And that's why there are rumors out there that ESPN's trying to tell the Big 12, listen, we need a window television-wise out on the West Coast, the Pacific time zone. So maybe you need to, Washington State, Oregon State needs to, maybe you need to reach out to them. This is all about money. It's all about TV ratings. It's all about the networks are paying a lot of money. And they want to have a say as to how this all is structured, which, you know, if you spend that much money, I get it. You know, if you invest a ton of money into a business, don't you want to have some input as to how the business is run usually? Unless you sign a contract agreeing to be quiet owner, a silent investor. So I get it. I don't have to like it, but I get it. And the Big 12 survive because they were able to be aggressive and get some of these schools? Is there a super home run brand that they've gotten since Oklahoma, Texas decided to leave? The answer I would say is no. Arizona is a nice institution. Basketball's very good, but they're not Oklahoma or Texas. BYU has a following. Their brand's known, although football wise, it's not like they've been, you know, setting the world on fire the last 10 years or so. Is BYU and OU or a Texas one of them? No. There's nobody the Big 12 has added that is the equivalent of OU and Texas. But you get strength by numbers as long as you don't have anybody weighing you down. And Arizona is a solid addition. I think Colorado fits the profile of the Big 12. And if they get better in football with Deion Sanders, that's a tremendous addition. Arizona State, I'm not sold on. Utah has won the Pac-12 the last 2 years in football. I think Utah is more, of all the teams and all the schools that the Big 12 has added, the one that is the least appealing to me is Arizona State. Now, some people would say maybe Central Florida. Although I'd say the Florida market's big, you at least got a footprint in Florida. And Central Florida is an up-and-coming school of athletics, according to various people that I've read, they say, listen, there might be kind of a sleeping giant that's going to get bigger and better. So maybe the Big 12 got an up-and-coming prospect, if you want to look at it that way. Does Oregon State and Washington State add anything to the Big 12? You could argue no, but if ESPN sits here and says, yeah, but we need that West Coast window. By the way, there are people throwing this out there, and it's somewhat inaccurate. Although somewhat accurate. I know that contradicts, but there are people out there that are saying that the Big 12 now has four time zones. Brett Yormark wanted four time zones. Well, the state of Arizona doesn't observe daylight savings time. So for half the year, you do have four time zones, and half the year, you don't. So if you want a full-fledged fourth time zone, then you need to get a San Diego State, an Oregon State, a Washington State, somebody else on the West Coast, because that's not Arizona State. But if you want to go ahead and go with the, we got four time zones for a portion of the year, fine. You can argue and brag about that, and that's fine. I don't think that's what Brett Yormark meant when he wanted the fourth time zone. I think he meant, I want a full-time fourth time zone to have, you know, games various nights of the week, and we can have all day long on Saturday, we have a game for the Big 12 that's in every single time slot and window. I think that was the vision he had. Obviously, he's talked about playing games on Thursday and Friday nights, which I hate in regards to high school football, but I get running a business like college football is, and the Big 12 obviously is part of that business. So, but does Brett Yormark and Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, and Kevin Wilson, I believe, is commissioner of the Big 12. Do these commissioners, do these school presidents, do these board of regents, do the TV executives, ESPN and Fox, do they really care about the student athlete? And my answer would be based off of what Eli Drinkwitz said, and I think he put it very clearly and very well. I think the answer to that is a resounding hell no. Listen, I like what Brett Yormark has done and everything, but I don't think he's doing what's best for student athletes per se. At the same time, is it his job to do what's best for student athletes? Or is his job to do what the schools tell him to do because he's paid by the university schools that are part of the conference? So instead of blaming a commissioner, should you be blaming the school presidents and chancellors and board of regents for allowing all this to happen? And I would have to say yes. If you want to be upset, like Eli Drinkwitz seems to be a little bit perturbed by it, and I agree with him. If you want to sit here and talk about how this is bad for student athletes, and you want to talk about how all these other sports are going to have to travel and suffer through all this other stuff, and it's all revolved around football, then you know who you should probably blame. You can blame the TV execs. That's true. You could. You could blame ESPN and Fox for really continuing all this, but ultimately the schools have to decide whether they're going to apply for membership. Now, would they be walking away from some money at the table if they tried to, you know, do the right thing by the student athlete? Yeah, probably right. So what does that mean? Money trumps student athletes. So when Congress is getting involved, which shouldn't, in my opinion, and the NCAA is talking about how we got to control the transfer portal, we got to control, have rules for the NIL. Well, there's no damn control over schools leaping and jumping from conference to conference. Why should student athletes have to play by different set of rules when all these universities are making buku money? And they're just trying to get a sliver of the pie. As Eli Drinkwitz said, is there anybody talking about revenue share towards the athletes? Which, of course, if you did that, you're talking pro sports, basically. But aren't we going that route anyway? You got NIL, players are making money off endorsements. You've got transfer portals. You got guys that are you got players that are flat out getting paid to play where they are. Hunter Dickinson's getting paid to play at KU, okay? And Nigel Pack's getting paid to play at Miami of Florida. And the bigger schools, odds are, they've got at least one or two guys that they're paying to play, if not more. West Virginia, Kansas, K-State I'm sure does too. Pretty much every Power 5 university, especially the bigger schools, are having to pay to keep players where they are. So they don't transfer out or to try to entice them to come. It's part of the business now. It's not illegal. It's part of the business. So people get all their panties in a bunch about, oh, this is horrible for college athletics, the transfer portal, NIL. And you know what? I'm not sitting here saying it's great. But I understand why athletes are trying to get theirs. You know why? Because when I see billion dollar contract for the NCAA tournament, guess what they need for the NCAA tournament? Student athletes, players, stars. Then the great players have jerseys they sell. And before NIL and all this other stuff, you couldn't make a penny off your own jersey, even if it was your number on the back of it. So the universities are going to get more money. How they're going to invest it, I don't know. The ones that are going to, you know, like in the case of the Pac-12, they're going from maybe a 19 to $23 million deal, maybe it would have got to that, to getting $31.7 million a year in the Big 12. You've got Big 10 schools making, what, $60 million a year once they get a full share? SEC, I think at least that. Their next TV deal might get up to $80 to $100 million a year. At some point, too, is money going to dry up? Is there just an unlimited amount of money to toss around? Because ESPN's making a whole bunch of layoffs and has for years now. And Disney stock's not exactly tearing up the world, right? So what happens, and somebody threw this out there, what happens when ESPN and Fox maybe don't have as much money as they thought they would or not willing to invest as much maybe on the next TV deal in 2031 for the Big 12 and other universities in 2036, the ACCs, the Big 10 and the SECs, I forgot how long theirs runs. You know, will it kind of dry up? And one person made a good point I saw on Twitter. If that is the case, which he believes it will be, then you're going to have the has-beens and the have-nots. And then you're going to have the Alabamas of the world and the LSUs of the world and the Oklahomas and Texas of the world and the Michigan and Ohio States of the world, USC, UCLAs of the world. They're going to start saying, we want a bigger share because we're the brand that brings the money in. And Vanderbilt and Rutgers can go ahead and get half a share or they can leave the conference. What do they bring to the table? And that's what Florida State is already arguing. That is the main theme of what Florida State is talking about. We are not getting equal distribution based on what we bring to the table based on the Florida State Seminole brand. Even though football has not been great the last few years, they still are well known as a brand in football. So Florida State's saying, listen, we think if we're not going to get more than, say, Virginia Tech, for example, then we need to look elsewhere because the Big Ten SEC is making way more than we're going to make, and we don't feel like we're getting our fair share. Why, if that's happening already in the ACC, why would that not happen in the Big 12 down the line? Why would that not happen in the Big 10 down the line? Why wouldn't that happen down the line in the SEC? Does money literally grow on trees? Does ESPN and Fox, can they keep doling out millions and billions of dollars for TV rights to college football or the NCAA basketball tournament, which that would involve CBS, TNT, and all that? Now, I mean, how much do you have to charge advertisers to where eventually advertisers say, you know what, this is too pricey, I'm not going to do it? What happens if the ratings go down? Advertisers then usually don't have to pay as much for ads. Well, that's less income for the networks, and if they've got this big bill to pay in regards to the TV deal to the schools issuing out, in the case of the Big 12, $31.7 million per institution per year through the TV deal, the new TV deal, from 2025 to 2031, I believe it is, we got a problem, right? Then suddenly it's going to become, well, I'm better than you, I deserve more. And that's already happening in ACC. Why do you think it's not going to happen to other conferences down the line? What does Rutgers bring to the table other than some eyes apparently in New Jersey? You know, if you're sitting here, if you're Michigan, Ohio State, and you're sitting like, why are we carrying Washington and Rutgers and Northwestern? I mean, why are we getting the same amount when we make way more money? Now, Major League Baseball teams talk about it. The Yankees have talked about it for years. Why do we have to pay a luxury tax and have to share money with the small market teams, especially when some of them pocket the money and don't really try to win? It's a fair argument. You know, that's why baseball probably needs a salary cap. It's for competitive balance. That's why everybody gets an equal share, right? Competitive balance, or so you think. Well, are we policing to make sure that every college has the same collective and they only can dish out $10 million total to every to all the athletes trying to go to their school for their sport? Is that equal? No, I guarantee it's not. So there's no equal playing field in college athletics. It doesn't exist. But yet there is even revenue sharing amongst the schools for these TV deals. But I think it's very, very possible. In fact, I think it's very likely that as we get further down the line and the Big 12 has 16, 18, 20 schools, the Big 10 gets up to, they're up to 18, up to 20 maybe, the SEC goes up to 18 or 20, you're going to find out these conferences are so big, right? That's great maybe for a while. But then what happens if the ratings go down a little bit? What happens if ESPN and Fox mismanage some things? And they're the two main players, right? Next thing you know, maybe they don't want to pay as much down the line for the TV deals. And, or the ratings are impacted because the best ratings by far are Alabama, Michigan, and Ohio State. And the Vanderbilts and the Rutgers of the world are like, people saying, kick them to the curb. They're weighing us down. Because sometimes it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. And having 20 schools in a conference, maybe that'll be great. But you could argue if you had 12 really good, I mean really, really good schools, you don't need 20. You got 12 outstanding schools, you don't need 20 at all. So quality over quantity. We'll see how that all plays out. I think it's possible that we're going to see Alabama would be one of the first ones I think of. Georgia maybe could say it. Michigan, Ohio State definitely come to my head right off the bat. Even OU and Texas could. I think eventually you're going to see some of these schools do exactly what Florida State is, and that is, wait a minute here. We bring in 15% of the revenue, but we're only getting 7.3%. We want out. Or we want to renegotiate things, or we're going to make things tough for everybody in this conference. I think we got to be aware of that. In regards to the travel aspect that Eli Drinkwitz was talking about, he talked about seeing some things on Twitter. These are tweets coming from some women softball players. Paige says, I picked a play in a high-level softball conference where being close to home would allow my parents to come watch my games. It's unfortunate to hear that my senior year I'll be playing as far as New Jersey, Rutgers, as well as other East Coast schools. Shannon says, I chose to play in the Pac-12 because of the ability to play close to home and in front of family. I chose the Pac-12 so my family didn't have to worry about far travel or giving up all their vacation time just to come see me. This affects athletes in every sport and academics. Morgan says, anyone going to talk about all the other sports that play multiple games in a weekend? What happened to mental health of student athletes being important? The balance of practice, travel, school, and having a social life is already hard enough. Why add even more stress? That's a very good point. KK says, it's an upsetting day for the Pac-12 lovers and people who love the sanity of student athletes' mental health, tired of being an overlooked sport. So that's a perspective from women softball players from the Pac-12 and other institutions. And those are all good points. That's not what they signed up for. Absolutely. That is correct. And this is what stinks for them. Same thing applies for baseball players, track and field athletes, maybe even gymnasts. You name the sport. Maybe wrestling. I mean, volleyball. There's no doubt baseball and softball are affected big time by this. And do we hear so much, right? There's so many people that talk about it, but they don't really want to do anything about it. Oh, we have this horrible mental health crisis. People's mental health. And it should be taken seriously. There are players that stepped away. Athletes stepped away. Simone Biles did it in gymnastics. Where I need to reset. I need to take care of myself more. Because I'm stressing out. I got too much on my plate. I got to handle things in my own backyard, in my own house first. I got to deal with my mental health. Do the presidents of these school institutions, do the executives at the networks, ESPN and Fox, and you could even also say the commissioners of these leagues, are they worried about the student athletes' mental health? And the answer to that, I don't think is that hard to figure out. It's hell no. And I will put more of this at the feet of the presidents of the schools and the Board of Regents. then I will the commissioners. If the schools would agree, the presidents, that, whoa, let's slow this down. We're getting crazy here. This is happening too fast. Let's stop and look at the consequences and repercussions and the costs that we have not considered. Instead of rushing into decisions, right? Leaders should not rush into decisions. Followers rush into decisions. Leaders should not rush into decisions. Do they need to be proactive? Yes. Do they need to be aggressive? Yes. But they don't need to be reckless. So I put this on the school presidents, and you could say, well, there's pressure from the TV executives. There's pressure to keep up with the Joneses and make enough money to compete. And it's all revolving around football. Yes, those are all good points. But the presidents do have a choice. Maybe it's not maybe they say, well, this is the really only best choice we have is to take the money and run and to hell with the student athletes. That could be. Another point to consider here, and I've seen this on social media, if football is a driving force of all this, then why don't we just worry about football and that's it? Football, go ahead, have a football conference, just like you do in the pros. Have football conference or divisions, okay? But every other sport stays in their own league. Or if you want to expand it more, maybe you just go football, men's basketball. And every other sport stays where they are. So for instance, you go ahead and you can have the Big 12 have their 16 schools for football. But when it comes to basketball, the Pac-12 stays intact. The Big 12 stays with the 12 they've got after OU and Texas leave this year. That would be an example of what people are talking about. That, you know, in order to help the softball and baseball athletes and other sport athletes is, hey, they signed up to be in this conference. Football is the one that's got more money. As Eli Drinkwitz said, we eat well, we sleep well. I mean, they've got all kinds. Trust me, I know this from firsthand experience, how the women travel versus the men in regards to sports, in particular football versus other sports, and other male sports don't get to travel like the football team. The football team gets to stay at the nicest hotels, eat the best meals. They're riding in the best buses. They're riding in the best charter planes. I'm talking the big time institutions in football. Listen, they still got to travel, but they've got the best accommodations. These other sports do not. So as Eli Drinkwitz said, football's going to be fine. They're going to be just fine. But what about the other sports? And I think it's terrific points to point out. The last thing I'll give you here before we sign off on the sports ticket, and sometimes people just throw stuff out there and they don't actually do the research, right? And that's happened more and more in society. It happens in everyday society. It happens with politics. It happens with various news and sports channels. There's just not people doing the research anymore. And then when the research is done and stuff has been proven various ways, it's just like, well, I don't agree with it, so it's got to be false. And that's a very dangerous slope that we're going down when we don't believe stuff that's actually been studied and researched. But it is okay to do your own research yourself if you like. But instead we're lazy and we just go with what anybody else puts out there. But I can give you some stuff that I'm too lazy to put together because it's not imperative for me to know. But this was put together by someone. I don't know who it is. So Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Arizona State, they're all going to go to the Big 12. I'll give you an example here. So Arizona, staying in the Pac-12, the average drive is 110 miles. In the Big 12, with 16 different institutions. Ooh, but you know what? I just found something here. Oh, no, that's right. Okay, here we go. The average drive for Arizona is 110 miles, whether they're in the Big 12 or the the old Pac-12 or the new Big 12. What else we got here? Yeah, it's a little bit, you know what? I'm going to look at this a little bit harder because there seems to be some things that are conveniently left out. So see, once again, you got to decipher things the best you can. We'll say this. It says that the average of all the schools, the Pac-12, what they used to have, the average drive was 13 hours and 55 minutes. In the new Big 12 with 16 schools, the average would be 16 hours, 57 minutes. But if you take away Central Florida and West Virginia, the two outliers, then it's 14 hours, 51 minutes. So there's only about an extra hour of drive time on average. In regards to air travel, 2 hours and 52 minutes, the average for the old Pac-12, I guess you can say. Now with the new Big 12, with the additions, you're looking at about an extra 35 minutes in air travel per trip, average. So it might not be as bad as we may think for the Big 12 and the travel stuff, but it is worse than the Big 10. I think the Big 10 has the bigger logistics nightmare, and they're already dealing with it, USC and UCLA. And I think that if the presidents of the Big 10 were really had their feet to the fire, would say, you know, ideally, we don't want USC and UCLA in our conference. We don't want Oregon or Washington because of the travel. But because the TV execs at Fox say, hey, we're going to give you this much more money if you bring in USC and UCLA, and the school presidents go, well, that is a concern I have, but wow, that's a much bigger check we're going to get. Sign me up. And I think that's kind of how it goes. The numbers are just so big financially that the presidents can't say no. And I get it. I get it. And then once again, who are the people that suffer the most? Who are the people that get the short end of the stick? I don't think it's the school presidents. I don't think it's the school, or I don't think it's the commissioners. I don't think it's the TV executives because they're getting what they want. Who ends up on the short end of the stick? Well, we know the fans. That's always the case. Always. The fans are always the ones that get screwed. But also, who gets the short end of the stick? The student athletes. Especially anything outside of football. And you could even argue that might be the same. You could argue that student athletes are getting the short end of the stick as well in football in various aspects, the way you want to look at it. In regards to more travel and family having a hard time getting, you know, from this place to watch. So think about this for a second. The student athlete is, without the student athlete, you don't have college sports. Without fans, you do not have college sports. So the two biggest groups of people that you need are the ones that get shafted the most. And then the schools get to count their money. And the TV networks, if they do well with ratings, get to count their money. Yeah, it's not a messed up system at all, is it?
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.